welcome to this week's episode of the Data Protection Made Easy podcast with myself, Jasmine Harrison, and I'm joined by Phil Browning and Katarina Santos. Hello.
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 Hello. So this week's session was on our favourite topic, SARS. It's always, I think it's always at the forefront of majority of data protection practitioners' brains because you can't avoid it these days. You know, it's on the rise, I think, generally. And if you're not, you know, if you can't relate to that, then touch wood, count yourself lucky. Hope it continues. But yeah, it was a really good session. You know, there's always so much to talk about with SARS, and there was a lot of engagement from the chat that I think we tried our best to cover, but it's difficult to do so.
There was never too much chat, but there was too much chat for me to keep on top of it, to be honest.
Yeah. But you know, we discussed the correlation with the data use and access bill and what effect that might have on SARS, and really, you know, floated around some ideas around the concept of proportionality and reasonableness in relation to a SAR, you know, its scope, I suppose, and yeah.
That was the main chunk of the session, probably, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Unpacking that change to the DUA bill, and you know, just saying, well, what it applies to this, and you know, therefore we've got to think of these factors, and you know. I thought that was, well, I quite enjoyed that discussion. Yeah. I know that you might have found it a little bit.
I enjoyed it. I think it's nice to, you know, try and understand the new bill and how it will affect SARS. And I think you did a really good job of explaining it, to be honest, Phil.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, well done.
What a change.
I do agree. I think the fact that we explore concepts as reasonable and what is reasonable and proportionate, and we identify that the lack of guidance or the lack of criteria will depend the interpretation of each controller. And I think the discussion was really, really interesting because each one of us had a different opinion. So it's worth to listen.
Well, that says so much. You know, we were talking earlier about how, well, on the session, about how SARs are subjective. You know, even mm-hmm. when you're coming to redacting, one person might think it's disclosable, another person might not. And it's so much more than that as well. You know, I think with SARs, say when you start out by doing SARs and you think, oh, I'm starting to get the hang of this now, and then you go on to the next one that you think is similar, you know, it might be like based on a similar claim for compensation or something, or a disgruntled employee about a grievance, you think, yeah, I've done one of these before, it'll be fine. And it's just never the case. I feel like it's never the case with data protection. You know, it's so nuanced. And that's the beauty of it, really, but also probably not the case for people.
As well. Yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, we explored that, you know, in various ways, and it's probably worth letting you get into the main part of the session and see what you think. And, you know, if there's grounds for another session, which I'm sure there will be, then let us know what you'd like us to talk about.
I saw a couple of cyber incidents, hospital, Wirral University teaching hospital. There's been quite a few NHS is here, haven't there? I'll tell you what was good as well. This week, BBC Radio 4 have been running a broadcast every day on scams and science and, well, scams. It was all about scams, which is pretty good, actually. And Martin Lewis, you know, the money saving expert, has been doing some of those. And I don't know if, you know, people were aware of them or might be useful, but again, I've listened to a little bit of some of them, and it's, you know, they're pretty good, pretty useful. So
yeah,
I was, you know, that was pretty useful to seeing that.
I found out about one the other day that I'd not heard before, and it was in relation to USB ports. So I can't remember who I was talking to now, but they were saying that when they go away, you know, across, like on holiday or whatever, they'll always charge the devices in a public space with a portable charger instead of using like a plug or, like, you know, a USB port that you can plug your wire straight into and that kind of thing. Because you can, I don't know the, you know, technical side of it. I've not really looked into it. It's just based on that conversation. But you can extract data from your device through that, and it kind of just, you know, that next level blows my mind again. But
yeah, well, we've got to hope. Yeah, we've looked before, sort of before, shown people examples of charging cables that are, you know, have got data extraction, exfiltration, hardware and software on them. So, you know, you buy the cable, you plug it in your device, and it's exfiltrating data out of your device. So the fact that the actual sockets have got that technology on as well isn't a big surprise, really. I think your rule of thumb has to be, you know, I never use anybody's Wi-Fi other than mine that I trust and my hotspot, you know, and I've got to get unlimited data to be able to use that. And I always charge from my own devices. I just don't trust anything.
Yeah, well, you're smart for that, really. You can't do. I saw a report that about cyber attacks costing UK businesses £44 billion in the last 5 years. There was a survey done based on 905 private sector organizations, and yeah, the figures are a bit staggering, to be fair. But I was surprised to hear that 52, well, in the survey, apparently 52% of companies have experienced at least one cyber attack during this period. I'm sure it must be more, surely. You know, it depends obviously what you classify as a cyber attack, when if they're actually aware of that. But yeah, I think obviously some of these organizations, the smaller ones with less budget, didn't have antivirus software and firewalls, so you know, that's obviously going to play a big factor. But yeah, I just thought it was quite interesting.
Very, very. These are called they're called OMG cables. I'll just put a link in if you want to buy
Thank
one.
you.
£254.
Just offer it out.
I read some interesting stuff, which you said you might have talked about last week when I wasn't here, but might want to pick up again next week in a radio session. Something about the European Court of Justice having a ruling that expands the rules for health-related data. And special category data, which are at odds with what the ICO's view is. So again, that's quite interesting to talk through, I think. Another really interesting one, which I think you did say talked about, the European Data Protection Board opinion on how far down the supply chain control the duties extend. I think that'd be really well worth looking at if you haven't already done that. And then something on the cookie rule, and you know how it also the European Data Protection Board's guidance has been updated recently. I don't know when, but recently, and they're saying that this kind of cookie thing extends down to information being stored in RAM, so you know, volatile memory, as well as in the processing of the CPU of a device. So it, you know, what the opinions I'm reading is that they're doing a land grab, trying to extend out, you know, how far the e-privacy directive goes. I mean, again, quite interesting to look at and talk about, maybe for next week.
All good stuff. Did you see that the DUA bill as well? So the data use and access, data use and access bill. I'm gonna start saying usage now. This is this. But yeah, that's gone through its second reading in the House of
Yes,
Lords
that was this week, wasn't it?
this or last week, I think it was last week. And I think it's that's is it the next stage, the report stage? Am I right? The committee, I can't remember, but you saw something about it around the discussion on AI, didn't you, Kate?
Yeah, there are some concerns around the implications of AI or and the unauthorized scrapping of the copyright material. Apparently, they had nothing around the AI, and there was the concerns about it.
Right.
Sorry, I
So
was just
that.
reading the chat. Shane said that there's an announcement by the Chancellor of Duchy of Lancaster in a speech to NATO Defence Committee on Monday about the threat to national infrastructure regarding Russian state actors. That's interesting. But yeah, I think, you know, oh, actually, I do have a good segue. So another news piece that I found was that the ICO have issued some guidance to local authorities on managing subject access requests in a timely manner. And they've made some really good points. It's a really good blog, to be honest. I'll put it in the chat, but it's probably just even worth going through that a little bit, because early this morning I was thinking about, you know, what in the current state now, what are the main issues that organizations are facing in relation to SARS? I think the uprise as being, you know, a main one, and being able to handle that. And then alongside that, you know, what things can be done to help an organization, you know, I suppose, address it and control them and so on. And a lot of the ideas that I had is actually in this blog. one of the first one being, first of all, you know, making sure that you've got appropriate retention practices in place. I think that's obviously a massive one, because, you know, I think I see in some of my customers, you know, they'll regularly get SARs, but they are generally quite small, you know, a few hundred pages, and they've got good records management structures in place, whereas others, it's always thousands of pages, and, you know, you've got to, it's not looking at the SAR, it's looking at the steps before that, or the measures in other areas of the organization to help in these situations.
I think in terms of, with my, just a quick example, in terms of one of my clients, I'm feeling that they have, because probably because of the nature of the operations and obviously the special category data and all the volume of personal data that is processed by the housing associations, they have this high volume of SARs always going normally alongside with probably the respect claims, etc. But I'm feeling one of our customers that they don't have any centralized, for example, data management tool or any tools at all. So they have data all over the place. They didn't have any procedure implemented. The records were not updated at all. So there was inaccuracy of the personal data. So it was really, really, really difficult to, in terms of procedure, we created one and now it's being implemented and things just change. And this makes make all the difference, the fact that you actually have a procedure, you have the responsibles for managing the personal data, and you have a centralized data management system where all the data or the repairs or the communications or the records will be centralized. So it's much, 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 much easier. Yeah. It was really good to like a campaign literally since the beginning, and now that actually works, is really good. Yeah.
Yeah, there's obviously everyone listening in, I'm assuming that you know, the majority of you will have your own gripes with SARs and whatnot, and please do get involved in this.
Because I'm interested to know what the current kind of state of play is with them, because I'm not, you know, if somebody was to ask me a question, which I hope they don't, you know, what is the current state of those SARs? You know, what are people thinking about them? What are the challenges that they're having? I'm probably out of date slightly. I'm probably assuming that it's the same things that were, you know, troublesome, you know, 6 months ago. But I don't know if things have changed.
Mm.
You're saying there's more of them being raised, Jasmine, aren't you? That's you're saying that the volume's gone up. But yeah, has the nature changed? Has the purpose changed? Are the challenges around? I mean, that challenge you suggested, Catherine, about having masses of poorly structured data, you know, it is obviously going to be a struggle. But what this is, I think that what I wanted to try and kick around on this session was, you know, if there's a change, I mean, the Dewar Bill in terms of its impact on SARs is really proposing to codify what I think the ICO and the ICO says that the courts have established, that you only have to do a reasonable and proportionate search these days. So I'm keen to kind of explore what does that actually mean, because I think there's multiple dimensions. Well, there's two to start with: reasonableness and proportionality. And then, you know, what do those mean in practice when you're trying to establish something? You know, and if you've got tons of badly structured data, I mean, the ICO's guidance is you shouldn't be badly structured. It should be nicely organized and indexed. But if you have got, you know, badly structured data or poorly structured data, even if it's just part of it, then, you know, how do you then apply reasonableness and proportionality? Yeah, it's interesting.
It's funny. We had a similar conversation to this last week, but in the context of an erasure request and how far you go in relation to anonymized data, where it can identify an individual. It's at what level can you, in theory, obviously playing devil's advocate, can you go to fulfill a request? And, you know, it could spiral, but obviously I don't think that would ever be expected, and, you know, it's probably not a direct way of identifying an individual, so it wouldn't be too important anyway, unless depending on the context, I suppose. But yeah, all good food for thought.
Yeah. So where do you want to start with this? You know, I read through the bits of the Doer Bill this morning again, just to kind of pick up on what impact on just a couple of things, really, data protection principles and rights. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things I noticed before we get into SARS is that there is a change in people's rights and their ability to object to processing based on a public interest or under official authority. That's being changed. So the introduction of this new legitimate interests, it's for public authorities, it comes with a caveat that it seems to read, you know, in section 75 that processing code by a public authority, you know, it can't be subject to challenge through an objection, which I think is quite interesting. So if it's a it makes sense as well. If it's a public task and you're working under official authority, why should somebody have the opportunity to challenge it? Yeah. You know, because the official authority you're working is being defined in by the law, or, you know, by a higher authority. You're doing your public task, fulfilling your public duty. And I guess that's why this kind of change has been introduced.
Yeah, changing.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shane said in the chat that weaponization, so going back to your question around why, you know, what is the current situation with SARS and people's perspective of that, he said weaponization of DSARS by lawyers in respect of damp and mould, who are doubling up by asking for the same information under a claim, resulted in 300% increase plus in SARS. And
yeah, you've seen... Mm-hmm. Go on, Jazz, sorry.
No, I was just going to say that's literally the case. You know, we work with so many housing clients and there's been such an increase, and it's not slowed down for, I think, the majority, except those few housing associations that creep under the woodworks and they don't really receive any. I don't know how, but
that's just weird.
Yeah, it does. I'm like, sure. But yeah, they you know, it is a lot of the time down to that, and you'll receive a request from a solicitor under a disrepair claim for all sorts of information, and then at the bottom of it, you know, a subject access request in there, and it's caused, you know, it's just caused an absolute influx in SARS. But I think
this proposed change help? You know, does it help diffuse a situation? I'm not convinced that it does.
In the bill.
Yeah.
What changed then?
Well, the change to make it, you know, kind of codify that you only have to do a reasonable proportionate search. I can't remember exactly how it's phrased. I will find it in a second. But, you know, if it's not so much the search that's the issue, is it? It's the redaction of the information, the review and redaction of the information that comes out of a search is where the time-consuming piece is, not necessarily the search itself. And, you know, which if you've got in a high volume, because these tars are being weaponized, you know, conducting a reasonable proportionate search doesn't really help you if that's your only get out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. In here, it's just, I mean, I think it's just they are trying to, especially for the housing associations or other organizations that manage a large and complex like data system, a lot of personal data, these probably will limit the search to a level that will be the reasonable and proportionate. But to be honest, I think will not change. If there is a problem within the data systems, will not change at all. You are right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure in terms of the data subjects. Probably the effectiveness of the SARS can be reduced for the data subject. I think needs to be a balance, because organizations, if they have these SARS will be a change for good, because the burdensome for the controls will be reduced. But probably for the requests from the data subjects probably could be, I don't know, could be denied or partially fulfilled, and I don't know, the effectiveness of SARS probably will be reduced in this sense.
Yeah, I'm just scrolling through.
You
abruptly finished there, Catherine.
Sorry.
Reading through. I mean, Jason's making good points about the nature of the DSARS for his organisation, and I don't know whether you can bat them away straight at the outset by saying, you know, this whole SAR is going to be subject to the litigation privilege, or again, whether you've got to go through the reasonable portion of search, pull out the information and go through it bit by bit and say, oh, actually this piece, oh, and that piece, oh, and that piece, oh, and that piece, oh, and this whole document are all subject to litigation privilege or protected in some way. But yeah, it doesn't necessarily slow down or help you with the process because you're not meant to be making blanket decisions about all this entire SAR, mm-hmm. unless it's manifestly unfounded or excessive. You shouldn't really be making blanket judgments about them, I don't think.
I think so. Marika?
It's still smoking gun stuff, isn't it? Yeah, everyone's still saying smoking gun stuff.
As said in the chat, would it be possible to go through exactly what's changing for employers in terms of expectations? And I think for me, this is why I wanted to discuss any possible effects of the Data Use and Access Bill, because currently, you know, organizations are really constrained with the demand of SARs, and it almost feels unfair on an organization, especially small organizations. But then obviously it's an individual's right at the same times, and how do you balance that, and does the new bill address that?
Mm-hmm.
And there's touch on different rights, and there will be changes affecting various of the rights available. I don't think there's that much on SARs, to be honest. There's in comparing it to the data, the DPDI bill, the previous bill under the previous government, they've taken out the, I suppose, exemption of denying a request for it being vexatious. So it's only on, you know, manifestly unfounded and excessive SARs as it already is. So I don't think much is changing in that respect, but I do wonder if that's something that should be addressed.
Yeah. So in the interests of addressing that point, and at the risk of being completely shot down and found to be not up to speed with it, I'll share my screen and we can work through it. That's dangerous, isn't it? That wasn't part of the script, was it? So this is the Data Use Access Bill, and we're on page 87 where they're referring to data subjects' rights. And this is about fees. This is all about Section 53 is the law enforcement directive part, isn't it? So I'm not going to dwell on that because most of the people who we work with aren't law enforcement. But this piece here, manifestly unfounded, is affecting in the Data Protection Act, Section 53, which is law enforcement directive. So I'm going to skip over that. So it's making some adjustments to the way that the law enforcement have to deal with subject access requests. But this bit here is time limits for response access requests. And again, I think this is just putting in place what we already do, because what the ICO's view is, again, it's, I hate the wording that the way that they structure this, the wording, but you know, they're saying from the change in the GDPR to be from within 1 month of receipt of the request to before the end of the applicable time period. And making some other changes, but the applicable time period effectively is when the controller has clarified the request and the fee's being paid, if a fee is going to be charged, and identity has been verified. So again, I think this is just codifying into the law what the ICO's customer practice is now. You know, it isn't, the clock doesn't start 1 month from the date of receipt if you want to clarify the request, if you want to do ID verification, or if you're charging a fee for a manifestly unfounded or excessive, or for, you know, so that's what that bit does there. Again, it's the way it's structured and worded, you think, gee whiz, you know, can't you make this simpler? But anyway, then they're just changing bits of, you know, this delay, you know, for, you know, into tweaking this applicable time period, which is really, this is changing the law enforcement directive. And the, you know, bits of the information intelligence services. So this is section 94 of the DPA. This is section 54 of the DPA. So that's nothing to do with majority of data controllers. You know, it's basically applying the same stuff, but to the law enforcement directive part of the Data Protection Act. Yeah, just changing the timeframes. Tell me if you think I'm talking gobble with you.
This is the bit here.
This is about privacy information, information provided to data subjects. There's a few little tweaks for that. Again, nothing that I don't think we already do. You know, this is about if you're going to use the purpose limitation extension, if you like, and say, mm-hmm. this is a substantially similar purpose, and therefore I don't have to send out new privacy information, etc. And this piece here, Article 14, is the same type of thing, you know, where they're saying in the UK GDPR, we've got to provide information to data subjects unless it involves disproportionate effort. It's just kind of clarifying what it means by disproportionate effort a little mm-hmm. bit, just tweaking the wording a bit. But again, most of this is what we already know, what mm-hmm. we already do. And it doesn't actually provide you with any real additional basis. You know, it doesn't provide you with anything material or substantive to say, right, okay, that's clarified that an awful lot. Mm-hmm. It hasn't really, just tweaked the wording a little bit. But this is a bit we wanted to talk about in terms of responding to subject access mm-hmm. requests. So, you know, again, referring to Article 15 of the GDPR, and basically it's saying that, you know, you'd insert into the Article 15 mm-hmm. that the data subject is only entitled to confirmation. So what they're entitled to is confirmation about processing being undertaken, aren't they? And certain other information and a copy of the information. That's basically effectively what the GDPR says. And this says that yes, fine, but it's based on a reasonable and proportionate search for the personal data and other information described in the paragraph in the GDPR. Then the rest of this bit is just affecting the mm-hmm. Data Protection Act parts of the Law Enforcement Directive. So that's the only bit really that is material. And we know that that's what the ICO's view is anyway, where the courts have landed. And so that's it really. That's the bit. And again, it doesn't really help you.
Yeah, I wonder.
It doesn't help you at all.
Yeah, I'm wondering in terms of reasonable and proportionate, what will be the criteria? So it will be depending on the volume, the personal data, it will be just the name. What will you be considering as a criteria for that?
Well, that's the key thing which we want to get into. Mm-hmm. One other thing I wanted to highlight actually is in section 75 here. This is 75 was it? It was section 70 somewhere or other. Sure. I've lost it now. But basically, this backdates some of this stuff to the 1st of January 2024. I'll find that bit. But let's talk about the proportionality thing. So I don't know if that is at all helpful to try and step through it. I mean, this is again, it's hard to read because I was flicking through between the Data Protection Act and the GDPR and thinking about applying the wording in the bill to the GDPR and to the Data Protection Act to see how it now reads. And yeah, that's what you got to do because you got to just dodge about between all these different things, which is that's why it's taking all morning. Not easy.
You did a good job.
Anyway, I'm not sure about that. Anyway, I'm going to stop sharing whilst I find the piece about the backdating. I'll tell you what that bit is as well. But that's the key thing, though, Kat. Kate, you know
Understand. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what is reasonable, what is proportionate? How do you work that out? You know, there's proportionate to what? It must be relating something to something else.
And to understand, because my thoughts on this is until now, the controls are already expected to make these reasonable efforts to locate and the data that is requested, regardless of the complexity of the request, right? So I understand that the intention is trying to facilitate the life of the organizations and the controller and trying to decrease the burden to them in terms of these researchers. But in terms of the wording, I'm not sure. So if it comes a request and we advise, okay, we need to do a proportionate and reasonable search for your request, I'm not sure what was that supposed to mean. We was just saying in terms of, okay, we have the name, we have the email address, let's just use this and that's enough. Shall we do something more? Shall we request more information? I'm not quite sure.
I think that reminds me of, you know, issues around WhatsApp and WhatsApp forming part of a subject access request. Is that excessive, you know, on each time you receive a subject access request by an employee or a customer, I suppose, depending on like what WhatsApp is used for, then are you expected to retrieve everyone's phones to search through the messages and, you know, different chats and whatnot? Like, surely that is excessive. Is that not not sure?
David's got his hand up. I've got loads of things. Just before we go to David, this, I found this piece here. So I'm back here with this thing. So on these changes to the search being proportionate and reasonable, the amendments here above, right, are backdated to the 1st of January, I can't see the point in that, because you only have like a 1 month, 3 month window. But I guess if you've got a massive backlog of SARS, like the MOD had a few months ago, like thousands, I guess you'd then say, when this comes into effect, let's say it comes into effect in the spring, like everyone's suggesting, then you could say, ah, well, this was backdated to the 1st of January. So anything after the 1st of January, we can now apply this proportionate and reasonable search to. Anything prior to that, presumably you can't. David, please dive in.
Yeah, no, and I don't think, you know, as yet there's no, as we're clearly identifying, there's no strict definition of a proportionate search. But isn't it like you treat any other piece of legislation? So you, for me, we document why we believe our search is reasonable and proportionate. We treat that as part of the SAR. Yeah. So we've got a documented defence. Should somebody claim, you know, go to the ICO and go, their search is not proportionate. And we will, you know, as per the ICO, if you're denying bits of the search for certain reasons, you know, clearly we need to make that clear. So if there are reasons that we're not doing it. However, I think, you know, the second part that Jasmine was moving across to about, you know, is WhatsApp. I don't think that's part of the proportionate reasonable piece. That's more what you're going to search, defining the terms. You know, we look at, you know, is it business usage? And if it's not business usage, we're not going to touch it. I don't care if it's my employees in my time, if it's not business usage. And we'll document that, because we quite often get requests for certain things. For us, we make it clear it's not a business tool. Therefore, we're not going to touch it. Yeah, we couldn't anyway.
That's the crux, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. We couldn't anyway, but, you know, that aside. So there's things like that. But we create quite a rigorous document of who we're going to search and why. So for me, proportionate goes, yeah, we'll get things that say, please search everybody. Well, no, for a number of reasons. The proportionate, I think if you somewhere in the legislation, it's to the reason for the request. The majority of mine are dispute. Yeah. Most people now support rather large organisation from an employment perspective.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, sorry, I didn't think
around dispute with the organisation. Oh.
You cut out for a minute quite abruptly.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. I didn't know if you were done or not as well.
I was talking, but the flaky internet. I'll finish and then I'll go off then, because clearly it's not too.
No, go.
Too
it's strong. Okay. Now go for it.
I've slightly thrown, what was that? Oh yes, so you've got proportionate. So we define what's proportionate in terms of, you know, search everybody. No, we've got no reason to believe anybody, and you've got no reason to believe anybody other than potentially the line manager and the HR person are going to be talking about you. You know, the people who are involved in you, and we'll look for your personal information there. Anything past that is phishing. It's disproportionate, you know, and they're the type. And I'm not saying that's the case. In every case, you know, clearly, as per legislation, we treat it individually, but we go through that process. We identify what we're going to search, why we're going to search it, to the timeframes and the levels, you know, and we get, you know, stupid lengths of time from, you know, requestees. And we just look, and we take that as a starting point, and then we define what's right, what works, seriousness, the allegation, you know, that can help. That's all part of the proportionality and those pieces. And then we've spoke about, I think exceptions is something different to proportionality, because that's not proportionality. That's just data that you don't need to give because it's covered by an exception, should you choose to invoke that. And we do that quite strongly mainly around giving away personal information of people involved in investigations. We're really tight around that, so we tend not to give much information away in that space at all. Again, people can spend time look through the ICO guidance. It pretty much supports that position.
Yeah, I think you've touched on two main parts there. You know, there's the one side of documenting your justification and your reasoning for things, you know, how far you go and what you deem as reasonable and proportionate, and then also the context of an individual SAR as well, which is always so nuanced really, but so important. It's it's a tricky thing to navigate at times, but
that's the crux of this, I think, is what are we looking at when we're saying it's proportionate? You know, something in proportion to what? So effort in proportion to what? You know, if I've got three employees, do I have to, and I'm keeping data, let's say I'm a dental practice and I've got five employees and I've got records going back 50, 60, 70 years on patients. You know, I've only got three employees. Am I allowed to say, well, I've only got three employees, you know, five employees, whatever it is, and therefore it's disproportionate to expect me to deploy one of those employees to search for a ton of data going back decades compared to an organization with thousands of employees that might have the same type of data? What about the cost? Is that something we factor into this notion of proportionality? You know, if I've got microfiche, or remember a few years ago, the ICO, a health organization said that they had microfiche and they weren't going to search it. The ICO said, well, you got to. And they had to import a scanner from America, which cost them 10 grand just to get this scanner into this data. Could that get factored in? You know, I've got old stuff.
If that was to be considered within the argument of necessity and proportionality, that would be massive.
It's not necessity, it's proportionality and reasonableness.
That's what I mean, sorry.
All right, okay, sorry.
Thank you. but if that was to, if cost being, the, you know, specifically cost, if that was to be factored into the argument and, you know, if there was some case law on it or anything, that would be massive for organisations, I think, because I do find it crazy how much some organisations pay for SARS on an annual basis. Like, you know, I was saying to you earlier, Phil, wasn't I? It's one business function that, you know, hasn't been really accounted for in previous years, and more as, you know, more SARS are submitted. But it can be such a massive cost to organisations that.
Yes, but Well, these changes are only affecting the search. They're not affecting anything else. So if you find a load of information and it's going to cost you 50 grand to go through that stuff, well, you know, I don't read that the notion of proportionality and reasonableness applies to that. I think it doesn't apply to the whole site. That would be excessive or manifestly unfounded. Is this search is in searches in response to data subject's request is what the bill pitches you as. One of the things that David said, which I think is absolutely spot on, is seriousness of the allegation may be a factor in determining how much effort to put into a search. So that means to me that the purpose of the SAR is going to factor in that notion impact of proportionality. So what's the impact on the data subject? You know, why is it a frivolous request? Is it something that is deeply meaningful to them? You know, and if we have to understand the purpose to a far greater extent in order to apply proportionality, that actually puts in quite an awkward position, I think, as privacy practitioners. Maybe.
Do you not think do you not think we do that? Or, I don't know actually.
I don't know, SAR comes in. I mean, how far are you going to go to say, why do you want this information?
Yeah.
You know, because really, without understanding why they want the information, you can't really determine how much effort to put into the search.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just interested. I just want to check what you've got. You know, I'm interested to see if there's any infringements. Is that a stronger argument? You know, my life depends on it. That's a very strong argument. Mm-hmm. You know, my reputation depends on it. You know, what is the purpose of this request? And that, I think, has to be something that would be necessarily part of
the search.
What's proportionate.
Yeah, but I was just thinking, like, because the individuals have the right to request the information, they have the right to assess the information, then they submit a SAR. We can obviously consider the purpose and to understand why do they need this data. But if they prefer not to say, will that impact negatively, they are right then.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Kate, because if you don't understand the purpose, you can apply, you know, what you think is proportionality and reasonableness, but you might have got it wrong, you know.
Yeah.
It seems to be the case where, you know, they don't want to give more information where they are, where individuals are, you know, submitting a SAR to be difficult and, you know, they want everything and everything that you hold on me, you know, that's ever been recorded. You know, sometimes you just know that they're not going to read it when they get it back as well. But at the end of the day, it's the law and there's not really much leeway at the moment to do anything otherwise, I think. But then obviously in the previous bill where there was going to be the introduction of the vexatious exemption, that is also, you know, very dangerous to to water down people's right of access as well, because I think there's probably a feeling of that in the majority of SARs, except for those that are through solicitors and, you know, for a claim for disrepair or whatever it is in whatever sector, you know.
I mean, I think the current ICO, I'm not sure they've got their guidance fully aligned. Again, I didn't really have time this morning to check it all, but some of it is still saying, you know, you should be checking through deleted information and backups and archives. You know, does that sit comfortably with the notion of proportionality? You know, really, we need a kind of our own guidance, as David sounds like he's got internally, you know, and maybe a checklist, you know, so we can say in this case, you know, we think these are the factors that we should weigh into this notion of decision about proportionality, you know, and this sounds like it's much more meaty, and therefore we're going to have to search devices, we're going to have to search backups, we're going to have to search archives, we're going to have to search deleted information, you know. Or on the other hand, no, it's not, and therefore we're not going to search those. So where you search might factor into that, as well as how much effort you put in searching. I think the ICO's view was, if and this is quite interesting in relation to retention, put as much effort into the search as you would if you wanted it for your own business purposes. I think, paraphrasing, I think they say that somewhere. I couldn't find it in their guidance, but they used to say that. But you've got your box, you know, your room full of boxes of cartons of archive data, Kate, in your client. You know, is that something you're going to search through?
I think for me the criteria should be around probably the size of the organization, probably as well what are the resources that do I have. And it's something that I came across the other day with a client of ours, was a SAR that was submitted by a tenant, and they specifically requested all the information. And so we obviously went through if it was disproportionate, in what extent. And it was really interesting because they made a SAR, submitted a SAR by call, and they requested all the data, including the data backup, everything. It was really interesting in terms of retention periods as well, where it comes across, and actually the SAR, because should we include that data, like, information in our request as well? Like, it's true that they requested in all the information, but do you think about data back, all the backup data, as something to include in the SAR?
I suppose it has to be if you've got it, you know, if you well, have a record of that, then if it is requested, then
only if
any argument to say no.
Yeah, if it's a backup of stuff that's already in your operational systems, you're only entitled to a copy of the personal data, not every copy of the personal data. So if it's simply a backup of stuff that you've already got in your live systems, then forget it, you know. But if it's information that's backed up that's different from your operational systems, potentially.
Yeah, and then you get into the realm of, if you know, if you search through your backup systems of duplicated documents and
documentation and all that. Yeah, and is it proportionate to you for you to do all that research in terms of backups and go?
Well, it depends what resources have you got. If you're using Adobe and SharePoint to compare documents, wow, that is, you know, a low bar in terms of proportionality. Mm-hmm. If you've got a system like we have that will scan every document and, you know, in an instance compare it and say that's a duplicate to that document and that document and that document, because of the way that it hashes the data in it, and then it knows if it's identical or not, then you surely would be required to go to greater lengths. But then there's a big investment in that kind of technology to do that.
I do agree. I think to be honest, I think it's awkward sometimes as well, because we, considering that we have the criteria depending on the size of the organization and probably the resources the controller has, if we are talking about small organizations and they don't have money, then they have the resources to do all these and all these requests and input all these inputs in providing information for the SAR, then the data subject right will be jeopardized in a sense. And I know that in terms of accountability, it will be up to the controller. They will be in breach of the UK GDPR in a sense as well, but will be that all the rights of the individual will be jeopardized just because of this, depending on this criteria. I don't know. I think we should have more guidance around this.
Well, I think I was coming to the same point to make really is that I think what we all ought to do, need to do, maybe we do it collaboratively, is we want we need a policy. Our policy on SARS has to factor this in, so therefore we need to have some framework that we've got which has got lots of eventualities in it and lots of things to consider. Imagine it was a checklist and we'd get a SAR and we would say, you know, the purpose is this, the resources is that, you know, likelihood is that, the date range is that, the systems we're going to search are that. Right, okay, that's kind of the inputs, if you like. And therefore, what are the factors that's going to influence the amount of effort we put into the search? Tick through all those, tick, right, okay. We've now been through that exercise and the output is we're going to search here for that, you know, and we're going to spend. I mean, is time a factor? You know, we're going to spend 10 hours on it because that's the amount of time that's proportionate in this case. So we could actually devise something that would give us consistency, you know, but I think that's what we've all got to do. It sounds like Dave's got that already because he's got a policy on that. But, you know, it might vary from sector to sector.
I think it might vary from organisation to organisation because it's such a subjective area, subject access requests. I mean, in terms of what you search, some, you know, I've had conversations with people before that would only look for the individual's maybe name and email address. And, you know, that's a slight cause for concern because it's not always, you know, just that, that's personal data. But then how far do you go with that as well in terms of if it's someone, you know, trying to find information that, or personal data even, that isn't specifically the name, it might be a nickname or, you know, their initials and so on.
Yeah, or an ID number or something. Yeah.
I think ID number is probably a bit more accepted, but say a nickname, I wonder how much that would come into a search. We had someone with a scoping form come back once. I can't remember what the nickname was for the life of me, but it was the requester had asked for that to be included within the search. It was quite funny, but maybe not to him. But
let's say that one of you two made it a subject access request. You know, we primed our systems, right? We're looking for everything with. Let's take a pick on you, Catherine. Katharina Santos. You know, would we look for Kate as well?
Yeah.
C-A-T-E.
You'd have really. Yeah.
Well, what if it didn't occur to us to? Or if we're looking for stuff about you, Jasmine, and we're looking for Jazz and Jazzo and. Whatever else you get referred to as, you know, would we be expected to define that whole list of, you know, alternatives?
But in terms of when a SAR is submitted, I think if normally I recommend is if there is any questions and if we understand for the initial search that more information is related to a tenant. For example, I had a case last week that. The address was provided in within the SAR and then the surname and the name. And for example, there was a system that only had the first, so the initial, so like, for example, an S and then the surname. And just because of it, obviously more information could be found in different data systems and other tools. So what we did was acknowledge the receipt of the SAR and requested just a confirmation. So we have this information. Probably, do you want, in terms of the search, we will always look for your first name and last name. Do you want for us to do a search including, for example, nicknames, or do you have any other names, for example? We just always like to confirm to making sure that we are doing the search in the right way.
I think that's obviously, you know, the right thing to do. I think the beauty in this conversation is just raising awareness of that as well, because that might not cross everyone's minds. And there's so much to think about with SARS that, you know, what one person might do, the other person might not. But David, do you want to, or Dave, do you want to unmute?
I'm unmuted, but we'll go with David. We'll let you off a little bit.
Sorry.
That's fine. In reality, I mean, if we're advising people to go back out and ask for nicknames, I think, I wouldn't be asking you guys back to support my DSAR process. You're making it more complex for the people. In reality, those, in my experience anyway, and mainly around employment but consumer, they'll ask you if they think there's a nickname, you know, exactly like the one that Jasmine was alluded to. And we get that a lot. And we'll get initials. And sometimes that just doesn't work. You're going to find CS. Several million times, it just becomes absolutely unproportionate at that stage. And how do you know that CS is that CS without, you know, and there's those kind of things. But Yeah, I've no doubt we'd look for, you know, we'd look for Katarina Santos. We'd probably look for Katarina. We'd look for Santos. So if she'd come back and ask for Kate, we'd probably look for Kate, you know. But if she hadn't, I'm not going to start putting Kate in. No, why would
no, you
I?
Wouldn't know to. Yeah. Well, you wouldn't know to for start.
Exactly.
You?
And I, you know, and I don't see any way where I'm ever going back and go, oh, would you like to give us some more search terms? You know, I mean, actually, search terms are quite useful. You know, we ask, going back to your original point, we ask them to support us in identifying the information. If they're not willing to play ball, they'll get a very, they get more for giving us the additional information than they ever will for not. Because if you don't give me it, I'm not going to search email and stuff with just an open it. If I will create the search terms based on 95% of the time we know exactly why people are contacting us. So we will devise search terms to search against to make it proportionate. Otherwise, in the scale of in our organizational scale, what you get back is just disproportionate. And you know, we're never going to turn around from an ICO perspective and go, it's disproportionate. That's not right. So we look at what they're after, and we know if they're in dispute, and we generally know why we meet with the groups who they're in dispute with. We understand what's going on within the organization, and then we, as part of that proportionate document we talked about earlier on, we document the search terms we're going to use as well and why we think they're correct. And yeah, and that's the kind of the process. So I do think, you know, that's sort of cutting it down through search terms. I don't think we've ever searched just on a name. It just would be massive. Even, you know, we've had some from people who've entered and left the organization within 3 months, clearly in dispute. And even then, the volume of information is proportionate.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think in terms of the initials, if we're trying to figure out a CS or JH just in our tools as a search, would be disproportionate. But well, it depends on the criteria of the search, isn't it?
Probably depends on the size of the organization in the, as well. I'm just thinking, is there another CS here? Or
yes, it will be.
But I've got an interesting question. So Stella in the chat has said, I have a customer that keeps requesting call recordings and now transcripts, but no, they aren't even accessing the data when provided. So going back to that conversation a bit earlier, and a couple of people have said that they've just got the same, you know, the same situations. And I wonder, does it get to a point where you can argue that that is manifestly unfounded?
I would do.
Yeah.
I'd do it straight away. And I'd say, you know, what's the worst that can happen is that they go and complain to the ICO and the ICO says, no, you've got to do it. You know, but, you know, if they're not accessing it, you've got evidence not accessing it, I'd be saying, no, you're just trying to, it's an abusive process. You're trying to mess us about, you know, you put through all this stuff, you know, 2-3 times or whatever, and you've not accessed the data, therefore we're not going to process another one for a while. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I'd get away with it, you know, but I would take that stance. I'm not sure how lawful that is, but you know, if they are abusing the process, they'll just go away, won't they? If they actually do want to raise a SAR, then they'd come back, and probably with the ICO on their side. But yeah, you know,
Jill's asked, what if they are accessing it, requesting the call recording after every phone conversation they have? That's very irritating.
Well, is that subject tax request, or is it a kind of a service request? Could you put it into context of a service request and therefore not bound by the rules of a SAR, you know, time frames and all the rest of it? You know, if you could work out that's actually just like asking for your bank statement, I want a transcript of your call, you know, or a copy of the call recording. If you could get it out of the SAR work stream, it might be easier. I mean, you won't have to review it, you won't have to redact anything out of it because they were part of the call. I don't know, I'm just, you know, thinking out loud.
I've got a question here. So I once received a SAR that said, I want my personal information. This should be a good test of GDPR. Could this have been manifestly unfounded on reflection? I don't think it is, because it doesn't, you know, the right of access gives an individual obviously access to their information, but to also have assurances that you're handling their information in compliance with the GDPR. So I don't think that could be argued as manifestly unfounded, because that's what they want to know, essentially. So yeah, I think at least, you know, you've not got some frustrations there that you wasted some time on a SAR that you didn't have to do.
But yeah, I think in here, surely we need to confirm what type of information are you looking for, if you just everything. And we could try to understand if you are looking for more for emails, all the communications, any particular deadline, any particular case, trying to just put the search the small possible.
Yeah, I had a conversation the other day with a customer, and obviously, you know, with SARs on the rise in general, and you know, people being more aware of their rights, that, you know, what can be done to at least reduce the work, you know, the caseload. And that obviously stems, you know, from other areas of the organization, say the complaints department, for example, you know, what could be done there to reduce the amount of SARs that are being submitted. And I had a really good conversation that they'd just implemented more face-to-face, you know, dispute resolution mechanisms and stuff. Like, so they would have, it was, I'm pretty sure it was a housing association, they would have like the complaints officer or housing officer, I can't remember who, but you know, go around to the individual's house, or just even, you know, face to face on a call, and it, I think make the process feel, make them feel more heard, make it feel more you know, genuine. And that would, that has hopefully led to a reduction in SARs, because people then aren't getting agitated that, you know, they're just being pushed on and emails are flying forwards and backwards and nothing's being done in the interim. So things like that, you know, I'd not really heard of that before. Obviously, I've heard of complaints departments, you know, that deal with disgruntled customers and whatnot. But it, like, I think being more personable and understanding beforehand and training for those relevant staff would have a massive impact. But, and I also had another conversation with an with a customer who, they wanted SARS training for different departments. So whoever, you know, made the SAR, whether it was an employee, so HR, or you know, a different department, they would be able to review their own, or review and redact their own SARS. And it didn't really sit right with me when I first heard it, to be honest. I think in a perfect world, you know, if they had sufficient training over, you know, an extended period of time, then, you know, it could work. But I think there's obviously some risks in doing that as well. But then you're then back to the situation of having one person who wants to be proactive in the data protection compliance. And then, you know, they've got no time because they're just doing SARS all the time. So yeah, it's not an easy thing to navigate, is it?
I think just, we have to finish with it, but Victoria's question here about relating personal data relating to or assets owned by the individual. You know, again, I think we could spend a whole session on this, but I recall that the European Data Protection Board guidance on SARS suggests, or what is personal information, suggests that, you know, notes about a car mechanic makes about somebody's car might be personal data depending on the context. So you can't out, what I'm saying is you can't rule it out. Just because it's about a house doesn't mean it's not any way relating to that individual or their lifestyle or their, you know, or way they've occupied the house or something. So, or a car or whatever. So, you know, I think, I mean, imagine you've got a black box in your car and it's tracking you around, you know, the information related to the car, but it actually relates to the driver. So I think it's not as simple as saying, oh, it's an inanimate object, therefore is out of scope.
I think you've just got to consider, you know, what that information is relating to, you know, what is the purpose in
the
sense.
Context.
Yeah, exactly. Like, is it, for example, a repairs in a house, is that to fix the house, or is that because, I don't know, in relation to the resident that lives there. I can't think really why, but if you know, if they're complaining about a repair and that specifically, that information would be the individual, but what changes have been made might not necessarily be. It's I don't even know if it's semantics, it's just you know, case by case, it's very subjective at times, and it's difficult.
I've got a question for you. Last question, I think, probably of the session. Is there such a thing as a subjective access request? Maybe they should be reading.
Bye, Phil.
It's time.
Yeah, we'll call it there. Might be room for another session in the near future because it is just obviously endless talking about stars.
An objective answer.
Very good.
But yeah, thank you both for a good session, and thank you everyone for listening and getting involved as well. We'll be back next week for a GDPR radio session, but in the meantime, have a great weekend.
Thank you.